such a weird term, because when you think of expert, you think of like Tony Robbins or Tim Ferriss or like people like that. When there's so many experts, you don't need to be known to be an expert. You can just be an expert to the audience and to the niche that you work with.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and a healthier life freelancing. I'm your host, Brendan Dunn, and I've been, it's what, 5 days to go until the conference. So I've been in just hyperdrive mode, trying to get everything ordered, the badges, the preparation for the venues, the after parties. I mean, there's a lot. This is definitely taking me to the edge of my comfort zone. You know, it's easy for me nowadays to develop a new product or to interview somebody for the show or whatever else. I mean, that all used to be not only stressful, but also a little intimidating, nerve-wracking for me. But I've gotten over it just because I've done it for a while now. But this event is totally new for me. I think it's going to go off without a hitch. You know, I'm crossing my fingers on that, but it's shaping up to be great. So if you are joining us, by the time you hear this, it's probably going to be a few days before we actually kick off. But yeah, I'll see you then. And if not, hopefully I'll see you next year or at some other conference that I attend. But today I sat down with Paul Jarvis. Paul is a really good friend of mine who he also has a course for freelancers called The Creative Class. Paul and I, both of us have kind of made that transition from full-time consulting to having products, to building products. And I wanted to sit down with him because he and I are pretty similar when it comes to the kind of products we create, kind of what we do. I wanted to just bring him on so we could just talk shop. Like if he and I were, unfortunately, he's not able to make it to the conference, but if he and I were at the conference and we were having a drink, what would we say to each other? How would we talk about our craft? What advice would we give our former selves? So that's what we attempted to do in this interview. So without any further interruption, here's Paul. All right, I want to introduce you guys to Paul Jarvis. Paul, welcome to the Business of Freelancing Show.
Hey, buddy. It's good to be here. It's good to finally...
I know. Finally, our schedules have aligned, right? And it all works out. So awesome. Really happy that you were able to make it.
Yeah, thanks.
Cool. So we're going to be talking... I want to talk about building products. And it's funny. The last interview I did was with Nick Desbato, right?
Yeah.
And we were talking about how you have a lot of these freelancers who like dream of building a product and, you know, they have these crazy low price points and, you know, they kind of wonder why, like, it's so hard to build a business at $5 a month or whatever for their new SaaS that they spend a lot of time building. And that, I mean, that was, we were talking about productized consulting and how you get a client who pays you $2,000 a month and, you know, five clients and you basically have a really nice income for yourself. But I want to kind of find a middle ground, and I know you've done a lot of products, you've done a lot of books, which is I think the first products I saw of yours. You have a course on freelancing, which is basically similarly priced to mine. You've built a lot of these while consulting, while freelancing, and that's the dream of a lot of freelancers is to be able to build products on the side, either to obviously make money, you know, additional money, or to even as a method of getting new clients. So I wanted to, you know, just kind of chat with you about what that's like and recommendations that you have for people on doing that themselves.
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting journey because if I look back, like, because I've been doing web design and consulting for almost 20 years, which makes me feel and seem very old. But it was only in the last probably about 4 or 5 years that I realized, like, all right, I've got this kind of one-to-one relationship down with me working with specific clients, doing their work, getting booked in advance, making decent money doing that. And I was like, wonder what will happen if I move into a one-to-many relationship where I'm building something once and then selling it multiple times, like products basically, right? So yeah, it's been interesting. It's been a lot of learning. I feel like even though all of my products are kind of like info learning products, I feel like I end up learning more than the people who purchase them, which is probably really good because then I can iterate on them, make them better, and that sort of thing.
like when I look at your product lineup, I mean, you've got like the freelancing course, you have, I think, a book for like vegans or something, right?
Yeah.
And then like a book on, or was it an email course on creating email courses? Or was it a book? I'm trying to, I should have looked at your site again before we get on the call. But I know you've got a lot of different things going on. And I was just trying to, you know, Nathan Berry and I were talking recently about, you know, this idea of having like a consistent lineup versus like a wide lineup, I guess, or a narrow versus wide. I mean, in my business, I've obviously been very narrow, but he's got designers plus marketers is kind of, to me, yours is more like concentric circles, I guess, right? Where yeah. Like, no offense, but I'm not going to buy the vegan book because I'm not a
yeah.
vegan,
yeah,
but exactly. you know, but I think that it works though for what you're doing. And I want to just kind of like, what was your plan going into building products? Was it more of like a passion thing? Like you just wanted to do something on veganism, so you created a product on that? Or was it like strategic in any way?
Oh, no, it was definitely not strategic. I wrote a vegan book because a lot of people, that was when Instagram started and I was starting to post recipes and everybody was like, when's the book coming out? And I was like, that's funny, there isn't one. And then after like 200 people asked
that's
me
awesome.
That, yeah, I was like, all right, I guess I've kind of validated this. I put up a landing page with mailing lists, like standard stuff. And I got a lot of signups. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I should write this. So I wrote the vegan cookbook kind of wanting to just figure out how products worked and didn't really like, I don't want to write another vegan cookbook. I am vegan. I don't want to talk to the vegan community. So I think part of what I've learned about products as well is that you need to kind of find an audience, because if you're building a product for an audience, you need to actually kind of like to interact with them. So building something for and writing something for vegans was great because I'm a vegan. I'm passionate about not eating animals and all of that, but I don't want to talk to vegans all day. Like that's just not fun. So I did that and I learned that, okay, I know how to make a product. I think that sold probably like 12,000 copies. Like it's kind of nuts how many people have bought that book.
That's
it's
awesome.
All basically nut jokes, really. Yeah. Like that's what it comes down to. That's why I wrote it. But so that kind of led me to figure out a little bit about how products worked. And then I was like, okay, I kind of get it a bit enough to want to keep going. So now I'm going to start to be focused. So then I wrote a book on online business. So it was web design for people who hire web designers. Because I was like, I don't want to write something for web designers because web designers aren't the ones that are paying me money. It's the people that want web designers that hire me as a web designer to do work. And they're the ones that pay me. So why not write a book for them? So then it became a lot more intentional and a lot more focused on my part, where I was figuring out, okay, this is the audience I want to serve. This is the audience I actually like to serve. They have the money to spend on it, and they have some problem that I know exactly how to solve in a way that I can prove in some tangible like results with and tangible outcomes with. So then I did the book on online business, and then a book on creativity, which kind of ties in, then another book on creativity, then a course on freelancing for creatives, which is all kind of tying it together in even more tangible ways. So it was a learning curve. And as I go, like every step I take, it becomes a little more intentional with where I want to focus.
Okay. So I'm looking at your Amazon lineup right now, right? And I see the Eat Awesome, which is the vegan book. That was April of 2012. That was kind of like your product training wheels, I guess, right? You're learning the ropes of basically shipping something, right? Like shipping a product, shipping a book that isn't the typical thing where you are billing a client or whatever. I mean, it's more like you're developing it, you're creating something, and then the revenue comes later. And then I see Be Awesome at Online Business. I guess that's the one for clients or for people.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
How did that help with like, because I've seen a lot of people and I know I've recommended to people that, you know, if you build a product that can serve as a lead generating tool. Like, I mean, one of the things we used to do with my agency was we did a lot of these educational seminars, which weren't, I mean, they were free, but we were just demonstrating our experience and our abilities. And that worked really well for us. So has that book, for instance, like have people read that and thought, wow, you know, yeah, I'm looking to build a website. So I read this and can I get the author to do it for me? Like, has that happened?
Oh, yeah. It blew my inbox up. Like as soon as I launched it, it blew my inbox up. So one, it like you were saying, it kind of builds that credibility. Like, yeah, this guy kind of knows what he's talking about because I read his book and everything he says kind of resonates with me. But then the other thing was, because I work with clients that have really big audiences, basically, they, because I involved them in the process, they were really instrumental and key to promoting it. Because at the time, I didn't have as big of an audience as I did now. Like, it's like growth, right? So I really leaned on them to get the word out, and they did. And that really propelled my audience from a couple hundred to like tens of thousands fairly quickly, because they all had audience in the hundreds of thousands or the millions. And I wrote a book for people like them. They read it and were like, hey, yeah, this makes sense. This is why I hired Paul in the first place, because they had all worked with me before. So it really helped for that, was picking an audience that was an audience that I already served. Because when you're freelancing, and obviously I'm sure you've had people on the show talking about positioning and audience and niching down and all of that. I know all of your articles on your site talk about that too. So when you do that and you're focused like that and you pick that audience, that same audience to build products for, you've already kind of got your foot in the door with them, because they already know you as that person who works with them one-on-one. And then when you build something that's one-to-many, it's just more of those same people can come to you for that product that you've made.
Right. Yeah. So, and that's the experience that I've had. And I know a lot of the people that I've talked to who have done something like that. I mean, it's, let's say you meet somebody right at, you know, at a conference, and they, you know, they end up becoming a prospective client. A lot of the time, you know, quote unquote, selling is you convincing them of your reliability and like all these things about yourself. You package that into a book. People do that self-serve, and then by the time they actually talk to you, like, they're hyper-qualified leads, right? Like, they're the,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, at that point, they're like, it's not even a competition between like Paul and the world. It's basically they've been in your mind for however many pages, you know, like, I should have looked at how many pages it is, but
you know, I don't even know.
Yeah, like, you know, they've been in your mind for a few hours at least, right?
Yeah.
So now they're at the point where if what you're saying to them is resonating, and they are really feeling good about what you're saying, if they reach out to you, they're basically, I'd assume, close to being a guarantee. Versus if they're reading it and they're like, I don't agree with any of this stuff, I'm going to delete this off my Kindle now. At least to you, it doesn't, like, there's no lost time.
Exactly. Right? They haven't needed to get in touch with me to talk and have a Skype call to figure out, are we a good fit? And that's kind of the way all of my design, like, clients hiring me, is like, they come to me and really we just need to talk about how much it's going to cost and when it's going to happen.
Yeah, logistics.
They already know. Yeah, they already know they want to hire me. It's just a matter of me seeing if I want to work with them. And it all comes down to, like you're saying, it comes down to the book. It comes down to the fact that I write a ton of articles. I publish them in places where the clients that I want to work with spend their time. I write once a week for my newsletter. So people get, before they talk to me, they already know exactly who I am and exactly what I can do for them, because I've spent so much time writing books and courses and articles and doing webinars and podcasts and that sort of thing. So it all kind of leads up to that, where I don't have to spend any time, like, I don't have to sell anything. I just need to hop on the phone and see if I understand what they're saying and they understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's funny you mentioned that, because I think I said it before on the show, but I've, with my agency, we did so much of this sort of thing in different format, right? Seminars and things like that. But I mean, I remember once I got a call from a guy in Boston who had been to a lot of our events. He had moved up there recently, starting a company. And it was like a 15-minute phone call that closed a $200-something thousand project.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'll take it, right?
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. It's, you know, I mean, it wasn't like there wasn't this long vetting process, because the vetting had been done at scale, you know, and that's what happened with, you know, your clients in this book, it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of even with my course, that's why I have exactly like you. That's why I have a free email course drip campaign first, because I don't want to take somebody's money unless they know it's right for them anyways. I don't like processing refunds. It takes too long. So they get some of the lessons. They get some of the best lessons on email first. And then they see, like, okay, is he teaching what I need to learn? Is this valuable? Do I like his weird and quirky style?
Right.
And then when it comes down to buying, it's just like, okay, all I was waiting for was that buy button. So
yeah, exactly.
Done.
Yeah. The next book I'm looking at now, The Good Creative, that seems to be more focused now on people like you or who want to be like you. What made you just kind of shift from, instead of doing another book on, or even a course on, like, you know, helping clients be even more awesomer at online business, why that shift?
Because I noticed my audience was growing more from people who were like me than people who wanted to hire me. Mm-hmm. So then I could make the shift to talking to peers instead of people wanting to hire other designers. I found that there was more freelancers and creatives and designers and that following my work and talking to me on social and buying these things to give to their clients, which was a secondary audience I hadn't even considered when I wrote the Be Awesome Online Business, is that web designers and developers would buy this for their clients to tell them how to deal with people like them because it wasn't working.
Yeah. That's
so
great,
yeah, as I noticed, I actually really enjoyed that. So as I noticed my audience shifting, I was like, I guess I can kind of start writing more for freelancers, and then I can start making courses for freelancers and that sort of thing, because that's the bulk of my audience now. And because I listen and I talk to the people on my newsletter, I survey them every now and again, I kind of get a good sense of who they are, what they're doing, and what they're struggling with. And as I see those things, that's really, like, I don't need to just sit down and think, like, oh, right, what am I going to build? It's I already have 50,000 things that I know I can build based on all of the research and all of the data that I keep collecting.
Yeah, which is, I mean, and that's why, I mean, everyone says that the value of an audience is exactly that. I mean, it's that you have people who can really tell you, like, what sucks, and you can respond to that. Yeah. Obviously for things that you're capable of responding to and lend a hand. And that's where products kind of emerge from. But let's dial back. And obviously that's how, you know, everything I know, along with, the creative course or creative course, I hear that the was dropped last email of yours. Yeah. So, you know, that's how those came to be. But for the average listener who has a mailing list of zero people, no kind of, you know, no product ideas, no one on the receiving end who, you know, if they build a product today, they could sell it to tomorrow. I know there's a ton of, like, courses and stuff out there for coming up with products and all that kind of stuff. But in your words, like, what should somebody make if they don't have an audience? And I'd assume, like, I mean, I like to tell people that, look, if you solve problem X for clients, I mean, there's a need, right? Like, that's potential. But how do you really dial in, like, that first product and then, you know, that first customer or two who are not, you know, that are more low touch sales, that aren't, you know, you're not selling them with a proposal?
Yeah. So I think that the good thing about making products when you're a freelancer or when you work with clients is you have that to look at. So if we look at somebody like Danielle Laporte, who has massive products and sells hundreds of thousands of books and that sort of thing, she did, like, one of her books is called Firestarter Sessions, right? So she did 500 one-on-one sessions first before she wrote this book. So when she wrote the book, she had all of this knowledge from all of the problems that she had solved for 500 people. It's just like when I wrote a book on working with web designers, I had, I don't even know how many, hundreds of projects that I'd done in the past where I'd seen what had gone right and what had gone wrong. And I could use that and I didn't have to start from scratch. So I think when people start out and they want to make products and they already work with clients, that's like the best grounds to kind of mine for ideas and mine for the problems that you can solve. So I think a lot of time it's doable, but it's much more difficult to jump from zero to a one-to-many relationship. Most of the people that I know that build products, like yourself and Nathan Berry and all of those, and myself even, is we developed one-to-one relationships first and figured out, because it's much easier to figure out the problems you solve, because sometimes the problems you solve aren't what you think they are. Like, web design isn't why people come to me. That's just the output. For if they're hiring me to do their website, they're hiring me to fix their online business. The output of that is just web design. So if I had just jumped into writing a book on web design, it would have just been about web design. Whereas my book for building an online business and working with web designers touches 90% on business.
Yeah.
And a tiny, tiny bit on web design.
Well, web design is just the means to the end, right?
Exactly. So
all it is. Yeah.
I think that the figuring out and really dialing in and listening to and keeping track of all of these one-on-one relationships. So when you're working with your clients, what are they asking you? what's the reason why they want to hire you, which is a big thing, because you can just do the work and not pay attention. I think a lot of times at paying attention to your business and not just to your work is kind of key. And figuring out the reasons why people are coming to you and asking you things can lead to so many things. Like I could have 50 products right now just based on listening, just based on me saying why. When people come to me and they want something, it's like, okay, well, why do you want this? What's the reason behind the reason? And that really leads to the biggest thing. So I think really figuring out the one-to-one relationship first, and then moving those, what you learn from that and mining that data, and then moving it into one-to-many is so much easier than just going from zero to products.
Yeah, it was actually funny. So, I mean, this isn't me going from zero to products, but when I had my first product, which was PlanScope, which is a SaaS, right? Project management, or it is a SaaS project management tool. It was like, so over the support channels, people would write in stuff like, I expected the support inbox to be like, this broke, or how do you do this, or whatever. And people were asking about pricing. And I was like, I'll entertain this question. And I kept, that ended up happening a lot. I don't know why. I think it was because within the tool, I asked people to plug in their rate. And I did like a simple database query that showed average rate stuff like within the app. And people would be like, how do I get that number or, whatever. So like this is how the first cut, when it was a book, of Double Your Freelancing Rate came about. Because I was like, it wasn't like I was not in my cave, like thinking, I'm going to create some product, right? It was a response to stuff that was already happening one-to-one, these email conversations. And it was actually a kind of like a bet I had with Amy Hoy that led it to being a product. I'm glad that bet happened. But I mean, it's funny, like, had I not, I think a lot of us, I tell people all the time, like, when you're selling to a client, like, what are the questions that all of them ask you, right? Like that to me is, that's validation if there ever was. And it's validation in the sense that if they're coming to you as a consultant, as a freelancer, and there's a project that has money attached to it on the table, now it's a validated product that actually, has a financial, impulse behind it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. It's like the, going back to Danielle, like the testimonial for my Be Awesome Online business is a testimonial from her saying, Paul Jarvis helped me build a $1 million business. That's really like, I could have that and a buy button on the page. And that would be good enough to sell that book.
Yeah.
So having those relationships and keeping track of I find a lot of freelancers just like they do the work when the project's over, just kind of like never talk to the client again. Whereas I like to keep in touch and see what they're working on, what's worked, what hasn't worked. Because one, that leads to more work. And two, that leads to tracking results and outcomes, which obviously comes in handy, not just for case studies, but for products.
Right.
So doing that kind of stuff, like always kind of keeping the lines of communication open with clients and getting that feedback and keeping I just keep a spreadsheet. Like it doesn't have to be super complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so, okay. So in terms of like actionable big takeaways, I think that what you're saying and what I would fully agree with is, that first product it can't be built in a vacuum. It can't be the eureka moment that you had in the shower one morning. I mean, it needs to be like direct. It needs to be something that if somebody is saying, and maybe they're not saying it overtly, but at least you're able to kind of read between the lines and realize, okay, a lot of people have this problem that they're coming to me to get fixed as a freelancer. How can I generalize that into something that, have you read, I think it was Sasha Graves' article on the product spectrum?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that. You know, that idea of like on the far end, you have freelancing or consulting, which is like, here's a problem that I uniquely have, and here's a problem that me as a talented person can uniquely solve. And then on the other end, you have like book, right? So you have like, if you think of it like, I like to use the example of restaurants, like restaurants that don't have customers, right? So like on the one end, restaurant needs customers. They can hire a web designer to build them a new website, which will ideally get them more customers. And on the other end, you have like, how a book on like how restaurants can get more customers. And in the middle, maybe you have like CMSs built for restaurants or something, right? That are kind of like out of the box things. And to me, it's like we all focus so much on the individual stuff, that kind of like personalized consulting. I think it's just finding a way to like extrapolate a lot of what we're already doing into these more turnkey things.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of it comes down to just paying attention to what it is you are actually doing, like what the steps are, what the problems you're solving are that are the reasons why you're solving them. Because then that extracts to universal a lot easier than just I did X specifically for X. It's like I did this because, and that because is the reason that is probably the because for a lot of other people. When you take out the specifics, it's the reason that makes it universal. And that, I think, is the biggest thing to pay attention to when you're thinking, okay, how can I take the services or the offerings that I have and make them into products? It's that the reasons why you're doing those things as a consultant or a freelancer.
Do you have any like tips for people on how they can kind of extrapolate that stuff out? Like, you know, is there any like process or anything that you've used to help you kind of nail down a solution or a product for a shared problem?
Yeah, so there's actually a few things. So my most popular book by probably about 90,000 copies, which is ridiculous, is my book, Everything I Know. And that came about because of me paying attention to my mailing list. And really, that book is a combination of my most popular articles spread out in with stories. So that's one thing. The second thing is when you work with clients and when you do services, even though it's different for every client, figure out what the process is from start to finish, stick to it, and then in that, have places where you communicate and ask questions to the client and record those. Don't just leave those in any, you're never going to find that email. I know because I've tried before, I kept track of this stuff.
Right.
So have a spreadsheet for every client. Like, what questions do you ask them when you're onboarding them or if you're seeing if there's a good fit? And pay attention to what they're saying during the project. When you've showed them, if you're like designer developer, if you're showing them mockups before you start programming, what are they asking for? What are you asking them at the end? Like, I'm a big fan of exit interviews with a client. So after the project is done, figuring out what went the best for them, what parts they struggled with, what they kind of needed to solve, what it solved. And then I send another interview, about 40 days, I think it's 40 days later, saying, what have you noticed? Because I really like testimonials that give a specific, like, I hired Paul and it achieved X instead of Paul's the best designer ever.
Paul was fun. Yeah, exactly.
That's the worst testimonial ever. If I have a testimonial that's like, Paul helped me make $1 million or Paul decreased the bounce rate by 80%, then that's what I want.
Sad part is 90% of the testimonials are because people don't know. Well, that's another interviewed in itself, totally. But people have no idea how to get testimonials typically.
Exactly. So it's important to know how to get the right testimonials. So, but, and then keep track of it. So I have the four interviews, the before, during, after, and after plus, I guess 40, it might be 35 days, but it's probably 40 days. And then I keep track of all of those things in a spreadsheet. And then when I look back at those, and I keep looking back at those, every couple months I'll open up the spreadsheet and just start kind of reading through all of them. And it's so easy to notice patterns when you keep track of things. It's really hard to notice patterns when you're in the shower thinking like, okay, what do I want to make? Somebody asked me something one time. What was it? It might have been this. And then if you just have it in front of you, if you keep track of these things, if you keep in touch with your clients and you keep asking them questions, then it's so much easier. You have it in front of you. You can just look at it and start building things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, data is, what is that quote? Data is power or whatever it is. Knowledge is power. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that's, I think I mentioned this to you before. So my email course has worksheets attached to each lesson. And on the first one, I ask, what is one thing that you, like, why did you sign up and what are you hoping that you get out of this course? And I have like 8,000 submissions to that question. And I, you know, I mean, it's just, for me, it helps me see like, well, first of all, is what I'm delivering actually in line with expectations? And on top of that, what are things I'm missing that I could be, you know, adding out there as a addition to this or a separate product or something? And it's so powerful having, you know, that database now of things that I can reference back. I think the big takeaway that I would have if I were listening to this would be, you really need to make sure that you have these processes in place. Like you have this process for sales, and then a process for onboarding, a process for execution, a process for offboarding, which would be that exit interview, then that follow-up. And all of that, I'd assume, has built-in mechanisms for data collection.
Yeah, exactly. And that is what, like, that's how I write landing pages too. Like, that's how I write sales copy, is I look at what people have said about my product, or look about what their key takeaways were, and I'm done. I don't need to sit with a blank page, like, I don't know what to write. And then I also pivot the current landing pages and the current copy I have on the courses and books to match that, because I want to match the language of my audience, not match the language of myself, who's the person trying to sell these things. So there's so many uses for that data once you've started to collect it.
Right. And I think, it's funny, like expertise is, I think, another huge kind of elephant in the room that I think a lot of people struggle with, which is, well, I'm not an maybe Paul, you're an expert at freelancing. Maybe Brendan, you're an expert at freelancing. Yeah, you can do that, but I'm not, right? Like, that's not me, or I'm not an expert at whatever. First off, the two things that I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. My two kind of rebuttals to that are, first off, expertise tends to be very relative, in that you just need to be an expert to the people you're influencing. It doesn't, there's very few absolutes, I think, when it comes to that. So that's one thing. And the second thing, I think, is, like, nowadays, at least with my own things, I mean, if I'm able to collect a lot of data about issues people have, problems people have, whatever, I can then spend time researching them on their behalf, researching those issues, and then basically coming up with a product that, yeah, it's not just anecdotal evidence of mine. It's not just my own random, Brennan's experience stuff anymore. And now it's things that I have enough data, which is valuable in itself, to help me know what to look for. I can then look for it, report back, and put something kind of cohesive together, and bam, product, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I think a lot of books have been written in the past. It's like, you're not an expert until you start collecting information. It's just, that's how journalism works. The journalist isn't an expert. They collect a bunch of data. They talk to a bunch of people. They become an expert. Then they write about it. That's how it works. But then the other thing is, if somebody's paying you for something, then you're an expert. Like, that, if somebody's paying you to build them a website, you're an expert in web design. Like, if you're getting paid for that thing, then you are an expert to whatever level, because that level is so variable. But yeah, so if you can collect data, then you can become an expert. If you can get paid for what you do, then you can become an expert. It's such a weird term, because when you think of expert, you think of like Tony Robbins or Tim Ferriss or like people like that. When there's so many experts, you don't need to be known to be an expert. You can just be an expert to the audience and to the niche that you work with.
I think that's the biggest hurdle I've seen, at least. And I know that was a hurdle for me also when I started. I mean, especially when I was doing these educational seminars, I was teaching people on, how to I remember one of the first ones I did was getting started with internet advertising. And I talked about like AdWords and, plugging in a budget. But I mean, one of the doubts I had was, well, I'm not an expert. Like, Google wouldn't go and like use me as their front man, right? For AdWords. I'm not that kind of expert. But then what got me over that hurdle was realizing that a lot of the people in the room watching that presentation are the types who would hire me to fix that problem for them. So at least in their mind and for their problem, I am an expert.
Exactly. Those people would give you money to do that service. Hence expert. And I think the other thing is too, like, I don't know about you, but like, I still have doubts. Like, I they don't stop me, but like, when I launch a product, I still like, I don't know 100% if this is going to do well, or I doubt my own expertise sometimes. It doesn't stop me, but I still have those doubts. So it doesn't really go away. I think I can't remember who said it. It was like Elon Musk or something like that. Like, if you feel like you're ready, you've waited too long.
Right.
It might've been somebody else, but anyways, it doesn't matter. So yeah, I think like everything that I've launched before I felt like I was ready, or before I felt like I was like the best quote unquote expert on the subject. But you're right. It's like the people who want to buy these things would find these things valuable. So what's stopping me from launching other than my own self-doubts? And that's a stupid reason to not launch something.
Yeah. But I think you and I both know that that's usually like 99% of dead on arrival products are due to that.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's, anyway, if you're listening, really, I mean, this is the sort of thing that I wish I would have heard this 5-6 years ago, you know, like,
same,
you know, we were just kind of shooting that in the dark, hoping that, I mean, fortunately for me, at least I came across Amy Hoy's work and that was transformative, at least giving me kind of this like framework that I could then use, to help with my own stuff, to help overcome those doubts, to help, you know, I mean, data is the big thing that I know she kind of trumped. So I think that's the big thing is let data drive decisions for you and don't second guess data. Like if people are asking you in sales meetings, like about X, Y, and Z, and a lot of people keep asking you that, then to me, that's a pretty big indicator.
Yeah, be confident in the data, even if you're not confident in yourself, because that could never happen or could take longer than it needs to happen.
Exactly. Cool. So, Paul, we're running out of time, but what's the best place? I guess you've got, I know you've got Creative Class and then you have pjrvs.com, right? Are those the two best places for people to find you?
Yeah. So if you Google Paul Jarvis, I'm the front page. The biggest thing is my weekly newsletter. I send out an article every Sunday about freelancing, creativity, life ponderings, that sort of thing. And then the other thing, if you like what I have to say, then the other thing that I do is teach freelancers how to do better with business. And that is the Creative Class. And I think it's thecreativeclass.io or just creativeclass.io.
Okay, I was going to ask you if you had a new domain.
Yeah, that's switching next week. But okay. When this airs, it'll, yeah, we're in a weird time paradox. I feel like I'm translucent right now.
Awesome. And yeah, it's funny. It took me the longest time to remember how to type in your website, PJRVS. It took me forever to realize it was like, you're basically your last name, but without the vowels.
Exactly. That's why I just killed it on SEO. So if you just Google Paul Jarvis, I'm the first, I think I'm the first three pages, but it's the whole first page is all links to me and my website. Yeah. So
cool. Well, I think I got a bundle that included Creative Class. I haven't gone through it all yet, but your newsletter, highly recommend. It's great Sunday morning reading.
Thank you.
And cool. So Paul, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah. Cheers, man.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Business of Freelancing podcast. If you haven't left a review yet or a rating, please head over to iTunes, type in Brendan Dunn, type in the Business of Freelancing, and leave me a review. I do read everyone. And again, it's my goal to get this show in front of more people. And the best way to do that is to bump up its rankings in the iTunes store. So one other piece of news that I want to mention before I go, if you go to doubleyourfreelancing.com/clients, I've now put a little opt-in form there for people to put in their email address if they're interested in joining the 2016 class of Double Your Freelancing clients. Unlike last time, I'm not going to be emailing my entire list about when registration opens up with details about the class and everything else. If you're at all potentially interested in joining, it's going to be great. Like I mentioned in the last episode, the pilot class has been kicked off. It's going amazingly well. We're getting a ton of success stories from the first version of the class. You know, if your goal is to systematize how you get clients and to make the way that you build your sales pipeline a little more predictable, you're not going to want to miss out. So again, just go to doubleyourfreelancing.com/clients and earn your email address, and you will hear all about it when I open up registration this November. All right, I will talk to you next week for another exciting edition of the Business of Freelancing podcast.